LibertyNation.com does not endorse candidates, campaigns, or legislation, and this presentation is no endorsement.
Happy New Year with a host of new laws, but not a new Speaker of the House yet. All that and more on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are The Uprising with Scott Cosenza.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15.
We're in high school, I'd take you behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
His Twitter account should be suspended.
Right. You want to go to work? Go take the job as an essential worker. Do it tomorrow.
I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country, and maybe there will be when people realize.
I think possibly that's the most unattractive form in which prejudice can be met in this country, is the rage of the entitled.
I'm high as a kite in my garage, and I can see through these guys.
It's 2023. Happy New Year and welcome back to The Uprising, a podcast of LibertyNation.com. I'm your host, Scott Cosenza, and joining me today is LibertyNation.com senior political analyst, Mr. Timothy Elting Donner. Tim, welcome back to the program.
Feliz Año Nuevo. To you, say, Scott. I know you prefer an international book as we start the
year. We're going to grow the program, Tim, and certainly that's the direction.
Yes, there you go. Grow the program.
A lot of opportunity there.
Yes. I hope you're more successful at growing a Hispanic audience than the Republicans were in the midterms.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got New York legal weed, Trump's taxes, the Southwest debacle, some new laws to discuss. And of course, the big story this week is the battle for Speaker of the House of Representatives, which is underway as we record today on the 5th of January at 10-something in the a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tim, what is the latest vote count as we go to record here? Do you know? Do you know how many votes have been taken for?
Actually, the only vote count that matters, Scott, the number is zero. That's the number of speakers of the House that we have.
Yeah, now. But there's been lots of votes.
No, the vote count, it's pretty ominous for Kevin McCarthy as we sit here on Thursday morning. And just to put it into context for people listening later, at this point, six votes have been taken.
Okay.
And McCarthy has essentially stayed exactly where he started, which is roughly 20 votes short. But he's lost a vote, two votes actually in the process. So he's still stuck at 90%.
We also have, by the way, new Twitter files that have been released, which I think that we're going to reserve that maybe till next week. Now, I know that
yes,
I've promised that before and haven't delivered. And I will say that I apologize. I've received a number of complaints for the lack of a Uprising podcast last week, a year ender. And I will just say that I am not a conspiracy theorist. But if I were, I might put the blame at your feet for having a party for
super spreader,
a holiday
event,
party,
Scott,
a super spreader event. I'm not saying that you designed
even
and implemented that as a device to deliver to me the Wuhan flu, which I have. I'm now a survivor of. But in any case, we're going to muddle through it.
Well, Scott, I arranged for that because I felt that for you to be able to feel the pain
of those
who've been through COVID, it was instructive for you to actually.
I don't
have
know if you design it or you just assent to the plan that has been devised by others. I'm not going to weigh in on that. That's a question for others.
I'm not at liberty to answer that question.
So I think, Tim, that these events in the Congress they make my heart swell with pride that there are Americans in the legislature that are willing to fight for something beyond their own, you know, their own little, basically dollars or power. I just think it's funny how these things are being covered by different outlets. And just for giggles, I want to, you know, there's this idea in the air that Democrats are having a field day watching the Republicans go through this struggle session. And I think it's hilarious because when Nancy Pelosi was going to be Speaker of the House, the progressive Democrats had a chance in order to secure their own interests for rulemaking and for power and for legislation. And they basically just gave it up. They didn't use their power to gain concessions by the speaker. They were basically told to, this is the AOC and the squad and those others. And they were basically told to shut up and go along and get along. And they did. And they suffered for it.
I don't know, but the nation sure didn't. So, you know, if we had had an even more progressive speaker than Nancy Pelosi, things would have been even worse.
Establishment figure, I think, not a progressive. But I just wanted to play how Democrat Ted Lieu is. I think this was sort of indicative of how the positioning is going on.
Yeah. About the same thing you get when you go to the movies.
Thank you, Chairman Aguilar. And I first want to say that the chairman gave a terrific nominating speech for Hakeem Jeffries for speaker. And I know that Chairman Aguilar had to give that speech three times, and we only nominated one person because Democrats are unified. And if you saw what Democrats did when we were in control of the House, we passed American Rescue Plan to get our economy back on track. We passed infrastructure law to rebuild America. And we passed the Inflation Reduction Act to reduce our deficit and tackle climate change. And in contrast, when Republicans are in control, you get chaos, confusion, and crisis. Now, yesterday, many Americans saw this confusion and crisis. And look, for one day, I think there's... it was unfortunate. We can deal with that. But now it gets serious because we effectively don't have a House of Representatives. This can't keep on going. You can't have one branch of federal government simply not function. And so I hope that Republicans are able to nominate and unify behind one person, whoever that may be, because we need Republicans to govern if they can. If they cannot, then they should let Democrats govern.
There's a lot to unpack there, Tim.
I appreciate the fact that you selected one of the most rapidly left-wing members of Congress. This guy's a radical, Ted Lieu. And of course, no, I thought you were going to bring forward the meme, which is actually pretty funny, although predictable, from Ted Lieu of him saying, showing him eating popcorn and saying, you know, enjoy the show.
Right.
That's apparently kind of predictable.
There was a lot of popcorn memes, memes out there. No, I just think it's hilarious that like the old joke that President Johnson had to go have some minor surgery, they say. And when he got back to the office or back to the White House, all the staff was gathered around to kind of greet him on his way back into the, you know, into work. And he looked around and said, what's everybody standing around for? Let's pass some legislation. Like the idea that the Congress would have a day.
Let's go spend some more of the taxpayers' money.
Like the idea from Ted Lieu that like, hey, look, it's okay for a day. Maybe a day is okay, but any more than that. And, you know, I always, for me as a political observer, and I'm not the senior political analyst, but I do have a political streak in me to observe and be interested in these affairs. Of course, the primaries are the greatest time in politics in America because it's one of the few times that for those of us that care about ideas and fundamental ideas that they're really ever discussed. And this is the same thing that's happening now. This is about the fundamental ideas for going forward. Can you please, Tim, encapsulate what the Freedom Caucus? Now, I know we've talked about the Freedom Caucus a little bit on the Uprising podcast and in the pages of libertynation.com, the sponsor of the show, your source for conservatarian news and analysis 24/7. But let's do it once again and set the table here. What is the Freedom Caucus about, and what is their objection to Kevin McCarthy's installation as Speaker of the House of Representatives?
Well, first of all, the opposition to him is not the entire Freedom Caucus. You've got, that's 41 members in the Freedom Caucus, and more than half of them are supporting McCarthy, including Jim Jordan. So it's only people within the Freedom Caucus, and these people are hardliners who believe that the government should actually be run in a constitutional fashion, that we should have balanced budgets or close to it, that we should have representative primaries where the party doesn't put its foot on the process and support establishment candidates. They want rules about how long the members of the House get to read legislation before they have to vote on it.
And that legislation is,
we discussed that last week,
is of a narrow focus. You know, Ted Lieu said, I thought it was hilarious, one of the laugh lines on that segment was him saying, we passed the Inflation Reduction and Climate Change Act. Like, what the hell do those two things have to do with, you know, and one of the things that the Republicans
want. Well, I'll tell you what, the Democrats are great at omnibus bills. That's how they, that's how they proceed. They put everything under one huge tent.
When I worked in
and
the-
And then try to shove the whole thing through.
When I worked
that
in the Maryland-
That was like Build Back Better.
When I worked in the Maryland legislature a long time ago, there was a rule called the single subject rule. And it was that legislation had to be about a single subject. And there would be a parliamentarian type who would rule on these things, and legislation, proposed legislation, could be rejected if it was of a, of, as you said, like an omnibus nature. Because it,
well, the biggest thing that the Freedom Caucus wanted is the ability to bring forward a motion to remove the speaker, to vacate the speaker's chair, is how it is what it's called. First, McCarthy said no to the holdouts. Then he begrudgingly agreed to a group of any five could bring forward a resolution to vacate the chair. And now McCarthy, again, this is Thursday morning, so we don't know what happens subsequent to this recording, but now McCarthy, this sort of typifies the process. McCarthy has now said, okay, only one member will be required to bring forward a motion to vacate the chair. Now, of course, the problem with that is that you have utter chaos, and you have a speaker who has the sword of Damocles hanging over his or her head, because if they do one thing wrong in an unruly party like the Republicans are now, any of these 20 or anybody else can just bring forward a motion, embarrass McCarthy at best, remove him or whoever's a speaker at worst. So you get utter chaos. And I think the question is, here's the question. Is this opposition to McCarthy's self-indulgence, or is it principle? And I think a lot of the bulk of the media, even conservative media, is scolding these 20, saying you're being selfish. You are, you know,
the establishment is coalescing.
Trying to hold people hostage. Well, you know, couple things. Nobody died and left these speakers, the keys to the speakers office to Kevin McCarthy. But here's the thing.
He's installed himself in the office, Tim.
Well, he already put himself in before the voting started. That certainly didn't help the optics that he actually physically moved into the speaker's office. But it's almost like he wants the job too badly, and you'd rather have someone who will take it begrudgingly because they're not concerned about their own political fortune so much as policy. But in the speaker's seat, you have to have someone who is a political tactician, not someone who's an ideologue. And that's the problem, is that when the Republicans put in Paul Ryan, they ruined him, because he's not a deal maker. He was a policy wonk, and they essentially ruined, you know, one of the rising and important people in the Republican Party by making him speaker. So McCarthy's ideally suited, but these other people.
I took a look at the basket of perks a person gets to be the speaker, by the way, and it is a $50,000 bump on the congressional salary. And like, so in other words, just outside of the ability to direct national policy, which is, you know, pretty plumb, you know, position, right? I'm sure we'd all like the ability to direct our laws. Also, in addition to the 50K, and this is a big deal for a Californian, especially, Tim, that private jet that Nancy Pelosi gets to take back and forth, it shifts over to Kevin McCarthy, who is a Californian, if he gets the speakership. Or
well,
he
I'll
has
tell you
to.
What, by all accounts, he has worked his butt off to get there. He even campaigned for two or more of these 20 that are now opposed to him, raised money for him, campaigned for him. So, I mean, he did all the things you're supposed to do, scratched all the right backs, kissed all the right rings, campaigned for all the right people to set himself up for such a time as this. But I think the biggest problem is not that there's 20 people opposed. It's that the majority is so narrow that it empowers a small sliver of the caucus to do what they're doing now. And the only question is, do they ultimately do what the squad did on the other side? And as you said, give in ultimately, or do they hold out? Understanding that they're both principled, but also costing the party big time, really, with every day that passes.
And this embarrassment continues. It's their one moment to actually to use their power, I think, to enact some change. One of the things that they're saying is that if they lose this moment, that's it. They're done for the Congress. Let's go ahead. I think enemy number one, as far as the press is concerned, is Ms. Boebert, and I thought she had something very interesting to say on the floor. Let's give her a listen here.
My question is, why didn't the supposed leader of the Republican Party present these rules? Why were we fought so hard on these rules? The barrier that still stands in the way of these rules is the structure that prevents us from rolling over. And as my friend from Chip Roy stated, we need the tools and the leadership to do our job correctly. And I believe that Byron Donalds is the man to lead us to that path of getting America on track and uniting the Republican Party. My colleagues and I have worked tirelessly for months to build consensus, to negotiate in good faith, to help unify our party on border security, energy security, debt reduction, term limits, earmarks, among other many common sense policies. But too often, our efforts have fallen on deaf ears. Our border is wide open. Inflation is out of control. The Senate just passed $1.7 trillion without our input. So let me be clear. Our job is not to coronate the biggest fundraiser or rubber stamp the status quo or keep on going along to get along. It's to use our votes to elect a speaker who will enable us to get our country back on track. Getting the job done is what we were elected to do. And that starts with having a leader who supports Republican principles, builds consensus, and has a proven track record of success. Byron Donalds is that leader. Republicans, including many moderates, have been impressed by Byron Donalds. They're impressed by his ability to work together. They respect his leadership. We see him as someone who can communicate what we are all wanting to do in this House to Americans. And he represents so much more than just his district in Florida. Many millions of Americans all over this nation praise the work and the leadership of Byron Donalds. So let's work together. Let's stop with the campaign smears and tactics to get people to turn against us, even having my favorite president call us and tell us we need to knock this off. I think it actually needs to be reversed. The president needs to tell Kevin McCarthy that, sir, you do not have the votes and it's time to withdraw. And with that, I yield. Thank you.
Now, were you as surprised as I am that she seemed to call out Donald J. Trump
Well, it shows the what you might call the current political wattage of Trump, which has diminished from what it used to be, of course. And so his endorsement of McCarthy didn't move the needle at all. And I think that it was probably a play by Trump to show that he could be something of a team player, that he wasn't just this, you know, this wild card out there on his own, that he's trying to sort of push for more Republican unity behind a guy who's wanted to be speaker basically for his entire adult life.
Is it indicative of anything more in a MAGA fracture?
Well, look, I think the problem is, I mean, Byron Donalds is an impressive guy by almost any measure.
Never heard of him, by the way, before this week.
No, just no, personally. Of course you didn't. And that, yeah. And that's the very point I'm about to make, which is that, you know, it's one thing to say this guy's bad, this guy's awful. He's not good. He represents the establishment, the status quo, all this. Fine. What's your alternative? Now, Byron Donalds is, by all accounts, an impressive young man. He's a freshman.
How young is he?
He's 40s. Okay. As far as I can tell. I don't know that precisely, but he's an African American freshman congressman. He gives the right look. He's young. He's a good look for the diversity of the party. But the point is, he's a freshman congressman. He's not a guy who's in a position. I mean, nobody can be speaker when they've only been around the Hill for 2 years in the minority. So it shows you the futility, the ultimate futility, because this is not a fair fight in the sense that it's McCarthy on one side and basically just not McCarthy on the other. I mean, they tried to coalesce around Jim Jordan, again, an important policy person and a bulldog. And he said, no way, I'm taking the speakership, which is basically what Paul Ryan said when they tried to get him. He ultimately relented. Jordan will not, because it's a thankless job in so many ways. And you can't win for losing in so many cases, which is why Pelosi really was a brilliant speaker. By any objective standard, the way she was able to enforce party discipline. Republicans now seem like the undisciplined, chaotic party that's all over the place with no core. What do they agree on? Who's their leader? And I think ultimately, Scott, what's going to have to happen probably is that Ron DeSantis is going to have to parachute in, change the subject, announce he's running for president, and become the new face of this Republican Party, which right now has no face other than an embarrassing one.
So as I understand things, that Mr. McCarthy could have secured the speakership this week if at the beginning of the week he granted some of these 20 people some concessions with some
I don't think so. No.
Some committee assignments, no, and because some other promises. You're telling me. Well, just let me get it out before you tell me I'm wrong, which I'm happy to hear that I'm wrong about, because you are the political analyst, senior political analyst for LibertyNation.com, our sponsor, and I'm not. So you should know more about this than I do. But that's how it was kind of presented in a way that I understood it was. He refused to give these concessions, and then they withdrew any support they may have given. You're telling me I'm wrong about that?
Okay, here's what you're not wrong per se, in the sense that they made these demands of the prospective speaker. But here's what it was really like. It was like Lucy Charlie Brown in the football.
Gotcha.
Okay. He said, okay, I'll give you this. He didn't give them everything, but he did make a lot of concessions, including, as I said earlier, the ability of any block of five members to
vote of no confidence.
To vote, yeah, basically to vacate the chair and subject it to a vote, which means they pretty much automatically get 212 votes on the Democratic side, plus whatever Republicans wanted to defect. So he gave them that. He gave them a lot of other things more some more of the rules that they wanted. He, for example, agreed to remove the security system that had been put in place during the Pelosi regime. So the House security with the, you know, airport-like security, metal detector type things, agreed to remove that. So he did give a lot of concessions. And then they said, well, that's not enough. We need more. So then he's given them more concessions now. But the sense is, given that he gave them a lot of what they wanted, and they still, not a single one of them moved off the dime. As a matter of fact, a couple more joined them. It was originally 19. And now, as we sit here on Thursday morning, it's 21. He can't move the needle. So I don't know, frankly, Scott, if they're really bargaining in good faith, because he has made what most objective observers would consider substantial concessions. Again, most aptly depicted in the agreement to allow a single member to bring forward a motion to vacate the chair.
From my perspective, you know, I refuse to kind of denigrate people who are going to say, and this isn't, I haven't heard these words exactly, but it's the sort of tone I'm getting from them, which is that this guy is an establishment toady, and we're not going to let him be Speaker of the House if we have anything to say about it, because we came here to strike down establishment toadies. Yep. And just because he's a Republican doesn't mean that's cool. He's still one of them. And that's not okay. Well, to get along is over.
You're right. It is. It's a unipart. It's an anti-uniparty move, is what it is. It's we're not going to just dissolve into one big establishment swamp where everybody's. They may be near the shore of the swamp, or they may be in the middle of it, but they're in the swamp. And these people were elected to change that. And really, I think ultimately, Scott, what empowers them is Trump's victory in 2016. Since then, they've become convinced that there's a significant constituency in this country that is willing to toss the baby out with the bathwater in terms of the establishment and bring in some real rebels to try and shake things up on Capitol Hill, the way that Donald Trump did in the White House.
No man's life, liberty, or property are safe while the legislature is in session. That
I love how you let off your article on LibertyNation.com this week with that,
that assertion,
which is true. By the way, you have used that particular quote at least a dozen times on this podcast.
Why wouldn't you, right? I mean, like, that's too easy, Scott. It's the best message. It's often misattributed to Mark Twain, but as I did write in the pages of LibertyNation.com this week, it's actually from Gideon J. Tucker, who was a New York lawyer, politician, and a newspaper man. And boy, I just wanted to close out the segment by saying that, you know, less Congress in our lives. I hope that this speakership remains vacant for the 2 years until the next
Let me summarize it for the listeners most succinctly. While other people are concerned or disinterested in the possibility of a government shutdown, Scott is sitting there actively rooting for one, because he knows that only then can they be counted on not to
ruin it,
to create yet more mischief.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit here. I want to talk this coming, this year, 2023, was going to be the 50th anniversary, I think, of the New York Rockefeller laws, which are the worst drug laws in the country and created just generations of inmates and convicts in New York for drug offenses. It's funny because it's such a liberal place, you know, New York State and city, and yet it had, you know, worse drug laws than just about any conservative bastion that you can think of. But they finally have changed things. And we saw, I think, a couple of days, I think it was the 28th or 29th of December, Tim, wherein the first legal non-prescription marijuana sale in New York was executed. But the hilarious thing about it, or really not hilarious, ironic in a bad way, in a tragic sense, is they gave the licenses for who could legally sell weed to people that were negatively impacted by the horrible laws they implemented in the first place. So in order to be able to sell marijuana legally in New York, Tim, you have had to have violated the law previously. If you just obeyed the law when they had it outlawed, you're not allowed to be a person who actually can sell
weed. It's informally called the Convict Restoration Act of New York.
And
that's or like should
that.
Be.
Yeah. And not only did you have to break the law, but you have done so poorly. In other words, you had to be bad at it to the point where you actually were arrested and convicted. So you have to be not just a lawbreaker, but also unskilled at breaking the law.
That's true, because when you consider all the people that were smoking weed all of those years before it was legalized and never came close to getting in trouble for it, that's true. It's not a good look. It's not something you want to put at the top of your resume.
I predict
you couldn't even stay away from a marijuana conviction.
And I hope to write about this for the pages of LibertyNation.com, an article that would just lays out that how these businesses are doomed and destined to failure because of all of the hurdles that confront the operator of any kind of retail sales business. You can imagine this is, they go out of business all the time. It's hard to do. It's hard to have a prosperous business. And if you select for who you're going to lead, let lead prosperous businesses that you hope to prosper, and you just pick people who've been convicted, I'm flummoxed because it just boggles my mind that's who you would. Who are we going to let lead these businesses? Oh, I know. Let's get people who were failed drug dealers, and we'll give them the job of leading these businesses. They were insufficiently.
Are we sure that all the people that are getting them are dealers or just users or, victims? They were caught.
We know they were insufficiently clever enough to avoid prosecution.
Right.
On these bases before that's the key takeaway. So anyway, look for them to be in demise. And it's a great thing that people won't be thrown in jail or prison in New York for weed, to be sure. But boy, what a ham-handed way to go about it.
Now, seeing that you just talked about the bastion of leftism on the East Coast, I want to ask you to recount your story about the similar bastion on the West Coast and the bevy of new laws in California.
Well, before I do say that, I just want to add one quick note about the Trump tax story, which happened while we were away, which is that they actually, at the conclusion of their investigation, the Democrats released Donald Trump's tax returns. And I think that the priority for the new Ways and Means Committee chairman should be the investigation of past presidents and what we're doing with their tax returns. And I expect that we might see Barack Hussein Obama's post-presidential tax returns be demanded, because it's only fair to really investigate how these people are going to use their past position as president in order to make money, and whether or not we should have compulsory audits of past presidents. So I look forward to seeing those subpoenas go out once the new Congress is fully established. The new laws for 2023, the big one, Tim, that this is true in California, which has the most laundry list, I think, of new laws. But in 20, I think it's six states plus D.C., we've got minimum wage increases. And I think the Progressive Policy Institute that I took the stat from said it was like $50 billion, will be in additional payments in 2023 from 2022. Now, of course, I don't think they counted, the businesses they're going to go under because they can't afford to pay these, the increase, the artificial increase in wages. And of course, it's not the, you know, there's probably a lot of businesses that have, if you have a lot of employees, you probably have some minimum wage employees. But then there are some businesses that have lots of minimum wage employees, right? Restaurants and supermarkets and things like that. And those places have, they're the ones that are really getting the kick in the guts here. You know, they've got these massive labor costs already that they operate, you know, kind of on thin margins. And then to have the state come in and just artificially impose a massive increase. And the thing that...
It's essentially what you would call almost an unfunded mandate, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that nobody talks about is what it says to people who, you know, if you can't sell your labor for, let's call it $15 an hour, because it's not worth it to the employer. You can't give that level of value to the employer. You know, the progressive kind of retort to that, Tim, is like, well, nobody's worthless. Nobody's worth less than that. And of course, many people are worth less than that, but they could be worth more than that.
Oh, they're trying to use an emotional argument. Yeah. Certainly the life of a person is worth more than fill in the blank per hour.
How can a person support a family of five on minimum wage, Tim, in this country?
This all goes back to the Obama years and the what I call the minimum wage economy that he built, which meant that there were a lot more jobs, but they were lousy jobs that paid very little. So there was an understandable movement to raise the minimum wage because the new standard of minimum wage was not just for jobs that were entry level, where you would learn and then move on. But suddenly now they had become, hey, these people are working at McDonald's as a cashier, and they can't make a living that way. So you need to double their pay, mandate that their pay be doubled. And so if you take the $15 an hour that lefties want, a lot of them want more than that, 25 an hour. Biden certainly supports at least 15 an hour.
Why not 100?
Sure. I mean, if
25 is good, why isn't 100 better, right?
You can set it at whatever level you want. But if you set it high enough at 15 an hour and you combine it with the government largesse, all of the government programs that are available to people, you can make a pretty decent living if you're going to get $15 an hour for an entry-level job and receiving any number of benefits from government welfare programs of one sort or another. And I think that's the idea. You get more people in minimum wage jobs, and there's that much more of a call for an expansive government to cover the rest of
they're going to get the opposite. There's going to be fewer minimum wage jobs.
That's exactly
right. The cost of minimum wage is increasing. And what do you think is going to drive? You know, you talked about McDonald's.
You know, it's a science.
That's what we're going to get. We're going to get these robot kiosks.
Exactly. And you know what? It's
the impetus to do it is more than that. I remember, Tim, like three or maybe it's even longer than that ago. McDonald's. I read this story where they were implementing this cash register because the cashiers were so low skilled. They couldn't, instead of saying like, you know, somebody's McDonald's bill is $11 and they give a 20 and the cashier, instead of it saying $9 change, it would say one $5 bill, right? And four $1 bills, because that was the level that they thought the cashiers could accomplish. And my point is, you know, how do you get to the level of being worth more than $15 an hour? If you're a graduate of the LA Unified School District and you don't know a thing, how about going there and showing up on time and proving that you can do a good job with and be responsible? That's how you demonstrate a higher value.
Yeah, but that's not the current mindset of today's youths, Scott. The minimum wage jobs, I mean, you're talking about robots taking over. And for those of us who are enthusiastic about, for example, electric self-driving cars, because we trust computers more than we do other random drivers on the road. Well, when I go into McDonald's now, where in fact, computer kiosks are becoming more and more the rule rather than the exception. As a matter of fact, the last three or four McDonald's I've been in over the last year or two have
that trend is
larger
going to,
and larger kiosks.
That's
the result.
Rapidly increase with these minimum wages.
Yep. And you know what? People aren't going to complain. In other words, consumers are not going to complain because the computers are going to be more efficient than the low-wage workers that now want to be paid more but have no skills, like you said. I mean,
more money for less skills. Yeah,
the minimum wage was never meant to represent a living wage beyond a very limited amount of time. And so, you know, but it's just like Social Security. It was designed to be one thing. And it
that,
wound
Tim,
up being
is why
another.
I said nobody can support a family of four on minimum wage. That's a laugh line for us. Meanwhile, it's a call to action for the progressives.
Right. Well, but look,
and
I
of
mean,
course, they
like,
don't say to those people, why would you ever procreate if you only make minimum wage? You can't afford to have a kid if you only make minimum wage. You have to do better than that. Somehow that's shameful or disgusting to tell a person.
And the cascading effects of that is that the left is now using the economic argument in favor of more rather than less abortions, easier rather than harder access for low-income people to dispose of their babies as quickly as possible. So they're using the economic argument in this minimum wage economy mindset that Biden has reinstalled, I think, essentially, in the left from the Obama years, where that state of mind became fixed pretty much over 8 years. And Trump had to fight it. And he did fight it quite well. But all the gains he made have, you know, largely been reversed by the Democrats.
You know, there's lots of other new laws to talk about, but I'll just pick one that I thought was interesting, and I'll be interested in your take on it as to whether or not you think this is a good thing or a bad thing. I'm currently of the idea that it's a very good thing, but I could be movable on the point, which is that in California, which has a massive carceral state, which is to say the number of people that are locked up in California is huge. They are going to have free access to telephone services going forward. Previously, it's been a real hassle and very expensive for those people to make phone calls. And that's going to change in the new year going forward. And I just think that if we're going to lock up, you know, such a huge portion of society like we do, I think that the benefit to that will be, and I'm just thinking now of children whose parents are locked up or people whose relatives are locked up, that they have, you know, they're going to have access to those people. And also that the people who are behind bars will have, you know, their outcomes will be better to the extent that we can connect them in a way to society. You know, these people are going to get out, you know, and just, I think it helps them to be more, but also there, you know, there's a greater opportunity obviously now for fraud and some other things, maybe, you know, and stalking from behind bars. I don't know about, but anyway, I just, I thought it was an interesting new law. And,
that is a, yeah, I need to think about whether I thought that was a good idea, but I will agree with you that, you know, those people, we don't spend a lot of time talking about prisoners, but you know, every time we throw someone in there, we essentially define their lives, because when they get out, they're a convicted felon or they have a record, even if it's a misdemeanor. And
no, we're talking about felonies. You're right. No, this is about felonies.
It changes the arc of their entire life. And then they become more prone to become drug addicts and commit crime again to support the habit. Then you create, you know, the cycle of crime. So it's in society's interest to look at it far more as rehab than as punishment.
All right. Well, that's an encouraging note from Mr. Timothy Elting Donner, our senior political analyst. And obviously, we're less than an hour away from the reconvening of the Congress, and maybe we'll see a speaker, and we'll certainly get your hot take on that.
Or we may well meet again next week and be discussing the latest after the first 86 ballots.
I will appear.
You know that
I will appear with sparklers and special whistles.
Did you know?
To celebrate that if it's.
Did you know that in 1856 it took 100, as they like to say, 133 ballots to determine a speaker. So let's see. By next
week,
we should be up to 50 or 60 or 70.
What year was that?
1856.
Tim, I believe that my ancestors had yet to darken these shores at that time. So don't say it. Don't even do it. I'm gonna prevent you from uttering the slur, Tim. Let's go ahead and proceed with optimism for the new year and hope for the Congress. All right.
The Congress. Yes, I love when you say that. Go.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Happy New Year.
Entertaining, informative, and just plain fun. Watch Liberty Nation's The Conservative Five, produced by conservatives for conservatives. C5's The Left-Free Zone, hosted by Liberty Nation's Lisa K. Donner, joined by a raucous, irreverent panel of authors, deconstructing leftist narratives, debating the hot topics, and remembering to laugh. Join the official conservative safe space.
You only did that to piss Jeff off.
Liberty Nation's The Conservative Five.
That's it for this edition of The Uprising. Remember to hit Liberty Nation News for original articles, LN Radio, and our signature television program, The Conservative Five. Just go to libertynation.com on your browser or hit Rumble, YouTube, or check out our Liberty Nation News Roku channel. I'm Scott Cosenza. Thanks for joining The Uprising. This program is a production of libertynation.com, where truth is making a comeback.